Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Rodrigo Soto and I'll be your host for this evening. On today's show, we have a very special guest, Vivian Legg of Figu Australia. I would like to introduce Vivian. Vivian, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello, Vivian. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Rodrigo.
That's good. Good. So, Vivian, can you tell me a little bit about what Figu is? And yes, we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, Figu is short for a long string of German words. That's short for Free Community of Interests in Border and Spiritual Sciences and Ufological Studies. And it's the organisation that formed around Billy Meyer just for the purpose of spreading the information that he has been getting from the Pliaran extraterrestrials for several decades. And in Australia, the group has only been in existence formally for about 4 years, just over 4 years. Right. So I'm part of that group, and so largely we've been involved in translating the material that's been provided in German, as I said, for several decades already.
Okay, so most of the material are in German, and obviously that's where Billy Meyer's foremost language is German, is that correct?
Well, that's right.
Okay.
That's the language that's been produced in, and it seemed to be a more exact language. Well, we know it's a more exact language, and that's the reason that it's been done in German, but it is the language that is spoken by Billy Meyer and the people around him.
Okay. So just a little bit about the show. The show here is Expanding into Consciousness, and from what I understand, Billy's teachings has a lot to do with consciousness. So can you explain what consciousness is from the Billy Meyer teachings, from his perspective or from what you've come to understand and study?
Okay. Now, I'd just like to explain, first of all, that I'm certainly not an expert in this. I only have a partial understanding of it. I have spent time translating a couple of Billy's books, and of course that gives me a fair bit of exposure to it, but there's a lot to learn, and I certainly don't claim to have a full grasp of it, but I can certainly give some main guidelines.
Yes, please.
So the consciousness, as far as Billy Meyer and the Pliaran extraterrestrials is concerned, it's the tool that the spirit form of the human being uses with which to evolve, so gathering love, knowledge and wisdom by means of the material consciousness. So in this teaching, the spirit is just the fuel, it's the impetus, it's the incentive for the evolution process, and the material consciousness of the human being is the tool that actually does the specifics of the learning. So it's a matter of understanding how this process works, and in order that it can fulfill this function, the material consciousness has a formative function for the human being. So the nature of the thoughts and ideas that it produces forms the human's life. And this being the case, it's then able to learn, the human being is then able to learn from the result of those thoughts and those ideas, and thus grow in knowledge, love and wisdom. So if this is the case, if the purpose of the consciousness is an evolutionary one, for the sake of the evolution of the human spirit, and if for that purpose it has a formative function and actually directs and determines the course of the human life, then obviously it makes sense that we become as conscious of that process as possible and don't just let it happen in an unconscious and uncontrolled way. And gaining control and an understanding of the consciousness. On top of that, we also need to learn how to do it in a harmonious way that's in harmony with what is termed the creational laws, so the creational natural laws that underlie all of existence, so that the process is a balanced, neutral process that's done in a natural way and is free of the terrible degenerations that tend to characterise existence on this planet.
Right. So, pardon me, you've mentioned basically the growing of the spirit and under universal law, or creational law rather. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean that the spirit is eternal? I'm getting the thoughts of reincarnation being involved in this process.
Right.
Can you just go on and touch base on that for a moment?
Yes. Well, the spirit is the part of it's the innermost part of the human being, and it's not eternal. It doesn't live forever. Nothing lasts forever, but
Sure.
it's billions of years that each spirit form, each human spirit form takes to reach a point of merging with creation itself. So it's you know, way beyond our conception, that the time frame that we're talking about. So it's innumerable reincarnations of human personalities that this one human spirit form takes to complete this evolutionary function, to fulfill its evolution in the scheme of things. So yes, a series of reincarnations. So as far as this teaching is concerned, the human consciousness, the human personality, is a material thing that passes away at the end of each lifetime, and it dissolves, and the purest part of the knowledge, wisdom, love that it gained during the lifetime is taken up into the spirit form. And then a totally new personality, a totally new consciousness is created for the next human life form that spirit form inhabits, so that there is this possibility for evolution, so that there can be a new consciousness and a new personality that's capable of learning more the next time around.
Okay, so what do people talk about when they mention karma, and they bring up karma as a reason for experiencing certain things in this lifetime? Can you explain what the Billy's perspective is regarding karma?
Right. Well, in the usual way that the word is understood and talked about, Billy says that there's no baggage. The human being doesn't bring any baggage over into the next lifetime from the previous lifetime or lifetimes. It's just not like that, because if that were the case, then how could you get on with the next stage of learning? You need to be free of that. So it's a totally new personality, starting from scratch, as it were. Well, not from scratch, from starting fresh. Like if you're starting a new class at school, a new grade at school, you don't have all the baggage of the tests that you did the previous year.
Other than what you've learnt, right?
Exactly. Just the overall sum of what you've learnt. That makes, you know, that is you for the next year. And so the whole idea of carrying over baggage from previous existences is just not part of this teaching. He says, no, that would interfere with the process of evolution. Another thing that is perhaps similar in some ways but distinctly different also is the notion that, however, the learning from one lifetime or all that you think or that you do is stored at the end of a lifetime in what's called the storage banks associated with your personality alone, so that following personalities can tap in unconsciously to that information and draw on it, depending on how the life is led. But it's not forced on the individual. It's not baggage. It's just like data that can be drawn upon, so that it's learning that's not lost, as it were. But it can be of a negative or a positive nature.
Okay. So with this storage banker, would a lot of people see that as what I've come to learn is the Akashic Records? Is that something similar? Is it?
Well, it's a little bit similar in the sense that it's a place where stuff is stored and information can be drawn upon. But we don't call it that, although it was once referred to that, just to try and get people's to understand the general idea. We don't call it that because that's got a whole lot of other teaching associated with it that it is not necessarily in line with this. It's best just to think of it as just a place where data is stored. All the thoughts, feelings, all the imaginings, all the deeds, all the songs, everything, everything associated with what a person has been and done goes into this storage area and is unconsciously drawn upon in following lives. That's the explanation as I understand it.
Okay. So is there a reason to want to know, let's say, people have dreams and they want to know about their past lives and they say, I was this sort of person, I was this person and that person. Is there a reason to want to know that sort of information, or can we just go with what we are currently experiencing right now?
As I understand it, the general explanation with this teaching is there's no good reason to want to know it, and we won't know it. The natural thing is to forget it. because if you remembered, if you were conscious of how it was for the previous personality, it would be too confusing. You would have a whole set of other baggage, a whole set of other things to concern yourself with left over from that. But you need, for the purpose of evolution, for the purpose of being able to get on cleanly with the next phase of learning, you need to be free of the memory. You need not to be confused. It's hard enough when you have different phases of your own life during one lifetime
Yes.
to disturb you. You want to get on with a new phase and do things better. But you've got these memories hanging over you of the person you were 10, 20 years ago. It's confusing. And that's the reason given for why we don't remember, that we are given a natural way of forgetting somehow between lifetimes.
Yes.
And I think it might be that a much more evolved human being than we are on this planet might be able to know these things. But you need to have the maturity to deal with that kind of knowledge. That's a thing that I think people don't tend to consider, that it might be a nice idea. I mean, sure, I'm curious. It might be a nice idea to find out, but have you got the maturity and stability to deal with that information?
Well, personally, myself, I think I need to deal with this current life rather than worrying
Right.
about my previous ones. There's a couple of things there. You mentioned 20 years. Is this the okay? So, the question is, how long between one incarnation and the next, if you know, like the general time frame, or is that totally dependent on the individual spirit?
Right. Well, the natural time is supposed to be 1.5 times the lifetime of the human being, the natural lifetime of the human being. I think that's how it works. So if you live for 80 years, then I think there's supposed to be 180 years break in the natural scheme of things. But this teaching provides an explanation of how things naturally go. However, there are clearly, all sorts of things that are out of balance on this planet, not just in the affecting the physical world, but in other regards as well. And apparently, that's something that has been upset by our huge overpopulation situation, where people are apparently reincarnating much too quickly, which doesn't give. It's like getting up before you had a chance to have a proper sleep. And so, this is adding to the problems that we have on this planet. But 1.5 times the lifetime, I think, is that's the natural time on the other side, according to the teaching. Yes.
So, because of the world's population, would you say that there are new spirits on this planet?
That is said to be the case. Many many new plant new spirits, because there have to be, because there's this explosion of overpopulation, and only so many spirit forms associated with the planet, so it forces a new situation.
And that, just to go in a different direction, about the subconscious, the conscious, and what some say the superconscious. Can you explain the difference between the three or two, which from Billy Meyer's teachings? What is a
I don't
subconscious?
Right, I don't know what you mean by the
Yeah,
superconscious.
well, okay. So there's a superconscious, which, from my understanding, is a direct connection to creation. The subconscious, the
Oh,
individual
I see.
spirit, and the conscious, which we're aware of, as we're currently
Okay.
awake. So let's just discuss the conscious and the subconscious.
Okay. Well, this teaching certainly talks about the consciousness. But when we become aware of the consciousness and get to learn how it works and try to study whether it really is true that it's a formative thing that forms our lives, depending on the thoughts, we are taught to become aware of the role that the subconscious plays. And this is basically the sum of all the thoughts, feelings, wishes, desires, ideals, and so forth that a human being holds from all that human being's life. So the subconscious is really the greater part of our consciousness. It's the thing that is determining our lives on a daily basis, much to our surprise at times. And I find this an extremely useful thing to be made more aware of, because as you go through the teaching, learning about the power of the thought and learning about changing the nature of your thinking so that it's harmonious and so forth, you can easily be discouraged in thinking, well, you know, I've got all the right thoughts today. I'm thinking loving, harmonious thoughts. I'm going through the day. And yet, why am I feeling so depressed? And why did that bad thing happen? And, and one thing that helps you to understand this is that there's a lag time. You're not just dealing with the thoughts that happen to be in your present conscious awareness at a given time. You're dealing with the body of thoughts or the world of thoughts that you've created that makes up your subconscious. It's in a sense, it's your whole personality. Right. It's your that if all your life you've nurtured a kind of fear of a certain kind of person or something, and then just one day you decide that you're not fearful of that. Well, it doesn't mean that you've dealt with that sort of build-up of thoughts that's accumulated in your subconscious. So if you want to make this work, you've got to understand that there's a lag time. It's going to take some period of time of concentrated work before you override all the stuff in the subconscious that's going to continue to influence and direct your life until that's changed and replaced with something else.
So basically our conscious thought, let's say it's a fleeting thought, and you'd have to have that thought consistently and basically make it part of your subconscious for it to be the driver of who you are. Right. Is that right?
Exactly. So if it's a new idea you want to get going, new creative idea, you need to put it in the center of your attentiveness, focus on it repeatedly, make it part of your personality, give it time to get into your subconscious where it will take hold. And I mean, the whole process requires that you analyze your thinking very honestly and very thoroughly and notice whether you're also harboring ideas that contradict that one. Right. You may be doing this subconsciously, and that's why we have to increase our awareness as much as we can. But try to encourage ideas that are consistent with each other and notice when you're working against yourself because you trip yourself up that way, not wanting to admit various things to yourself. For instance, or things that are too painful at the moment to admit to yourself, they're going to get in your way. But if you know that that's how it works, then it's so much more encouraging because you know it's only a matter of time before things start to work, as long as you persist and as long as you're thorough.
Okay. So is there a methodology then from, like, at the moment we're discussing points about consciousness, but is there a specific methodology in doing what you're sort of suggesting? So
well, it's basically that. It's basically, I mean, most of us are not skilled in controlling our consciousnesses. I mean, at the head of this teaching is the advice to meditate, because meditation is simply learning to practicing attentiveness in a controlled way. Okay. So you've got to learn to pay attention to your own thinking. That's essential. You've got to develop the will to do so. In other words, you've got to get all your thoughts aligned behind this being a good idea. You've got to be honest with yourself. And then, yes, you have to put the ideas that you want to introduce into yourself into the center of your focus, into the center of your attentiveness. Take the time to practice those ideas. And a given way, especially for those of us who are not easily trained, you know, haven't had the training in meditation and so forth, an easy way is to use visualization. So what's called a wish dream or a wishful dream or something like that, where you compose the idea in the form of a visualization and you practice that. You go over it and over it. You give yourself, you know, 10 minutes every day or whatever it is. Even if you've got no time, do 3 minutes every day. Just do it regularly.
Yep.
And until it reinforces itself and takes on a life of its own, really.
Right.
But do it in make sure you're in control of the situation. You're choosing what you want to go in there. So really it's down to being controlled, practicing discipline, being thorough and developing the will.
Okay. You said about choice and you being in control. Now, a lot of people, even myself in the past, would attribute a lot of phenomena to, let's say, angels or being guided by Jesus or some, you know, external influences, like magic, like some would say it's magic, others say it's prayers coming true. How much control does the human consciousness, like my own consciousness, have over my reality?
Well, the explanation is that it's total control, really. I mean, yes, there are certain things that you can't directly influence now. Sure. Like, for instance, if a war took over this country and there was an invading army or something, you know, Billy is not saying, you know, your consciousness should be so strong that somehow you hold back the army. Mm-hmm. He's not saying that, but he is saying that you have the control over how you let that affect yourself.
Your own reality.
Your own consciousness.
Oh, consciousness, sorry.
Yes. Okay. But again, you've got to take into consideration this lag time thing. It's only a matter of time before you can get yourself out of a bad situation if you're focused the right way in order to do it. It's not an instantaneous thing, but you will succeed. That's the teaching. Sorry, what were you asking there again? I've lost my thread.
That's okay. I was about the deities or people attributing.
Oh, of course. Yes.
External influences over someone's own.
How much power? Well, it's an extraordinarily powerful thing, and of course, the teaching is find this out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The teaching is don't accept this teaching as a belief. The teaching is explore it. Find it out for yourself. Notice how the way you think corresponds with your experience and this sort of thing. But the teaching is that it is an enormously powerful thing and mostly works at an unconscious level, and is certainly formed by your beliefs as well as your thoughts, sort of anything that goes in there. So if you've got a strong belief system or a strong ideology that tells you that there are certain things going on, then this will inform the powers of your consciousness, and it will also create. So the explanation is that you are quite capable of generating your own images, your own visions unconsciously. So, of course, it's very important to be very honest with yourself, test your thoughts, test your ideas, and consider whether you could possibly be generating your own angels, your own phenomenon.
Right.
With what are the thoughts? Poltergeist.
Yes.
For instance.
That's right. Poltergeist seems to have a direct correlation to someone's own conscious thoughts, or that it's responsive
state
to some
psychical state.
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems to be one of the clearer examples that a lot of people are prepared to consider in that light. That if your consciousness can do that sort of thing, if it can make things sort of hurl through the air, it can also create images. This is the explanation, you know. It can create images. It's enormously powerful. So the point is to examine all this in your own experience and see whether that's true and see whether it holds out. And but there are all sorts of complicating factors like genetic influences. They say there's a genetic factor behind religiosity, for instance. So if you're inclined to believe a certain thing, it's going to come with you in your genes. So it doesn't mean it's got a total hold on you. It's just going to be a very strong influence.
Influenced by that, yes.
So if you feel that, oh, well, I couldn't possibly have generated such and such, perhaps you could have. Perhaps it's something that's strongly at work with you within you that you're not aware that you're even generating. So it's worth considering in the light of that teaching, I think.
Well, that's an example with sorry for interrupting. Just coming up to a break, Vivian, if you just you mark for a couple of seconds and we'll be right back. You've joined us on Expanding Into Consciousness. Join us after the break. Thank you. Welcome back to Expanding Into Consciousness. My name is Rodrigo Soto and I'll be your host for this evening. On today's show, we have Vivian Legg of Figu Australia, who's talking about the Billy Meyer teachings. But before we get back into that, I just want to do a bit of housekeeping that Revolution Radio is a listener-supported station. We go by donations from the audience, and a lot of the hosts and guests come on from using our free time, and we don't get paid to do this. It is really listener-supported to the point that if we don't get donations, we can't go on air. So if you're in the chat channel, in the chat room, there's a donate button on the left-hand side where you can donate. Now, from what I understand, the archives are available for people to download. It is $5 a month, and you get access to all the previous shows that have been recorded. And I believe for $100 you can get 35,000 heirloom seeds so that you can actually grow your own veggie garden, even a pack which is community based. There's so many seeds that you can do so much with. So in saying that, I would like to welcome back Vivian Legg. Vivian, are you there?
I am.
Yes, that first break caught me by surprise. I keep forgetting about that very first little break. So I do apologise.
That's all right.
Yes. Did you want to finish off what you were saying? Do you remember where we were up to?
Oh, well, we sort of reached a point. I realised that I haven't answered the part of your question. You called it the superconscious or something?
Yes.
The bit that's connected at the deepest level to the spirit. I think that might be what you're asking about. We don't, the innermost self is really how that's referred to in this teaching. So mm-hmm. the consciousness, as I started out this interview explaining, the consciousness is the thing that does all the specific learning, all the specific actions on behalf of the spirit. And so you have to think in terms of the consciousness having this huge component, the largest component, which is the subconscious. Mm-hmm. That's just to be aware that the thing that's doing the influencing, the thing that's determining your moods, the things that's forming in your life is, to a large extent, unconscious. Mm-hmm. But that's the only reason we're really describing that part. You know, it also has a connection to other people's subconscious. That's, of course, worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. So if you have something like a telepathy experience between two people, then that's going via the subconscious.
Okay.
But as far as the connection to the spirit is concerned, you just have this innermost self, which, you know, has a fragment of the creational spirit. You are spirit. You have a fragment of the creation within you at this deepest level, and that is the human being along with the material consciousness, and that's the only part that continues its existence. So the material consciousness along with the subconscious falls away at the end of each lifetime of a human being. Uh-huh. It doesn't continue to exist. But all these wonderful things, wonderful experiences that we have, such as telepathy and perhaps, you know, reading the thoughts of another human being, mm-hmm. and healing, if we cause a healing in ourselves, this sort of thing, it's all described as being, these are just functions of the material consciousness. So okay. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing. It's no less wonderful, but this is the material consciousness that does this stuff, mm-hmm. but it's inspired and informed and motivated by the spirit form of the human being.
Right. I mean, I had an experience in 2006 where I was praying, so there's a function of prayer here, but I wasn't praying to Jesus or anyone in particular other than the highest of the most high, so let's say creational force itself. And I wanted to know the truth about everything. And that day I decided to go through the kind of books that I had, and one of the books that I had was the Talmud of Emmanuel. Now that is the Talmud was discovered by Billy Meyer, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so at the end of the book, it said the mystery will be solved on September 16th, and it was some odd year. But what I realized was that very day was September 16th. Mm. So then I started to think, oh, you know, did my prayer get answered? So, and from your point of view, what do you think occurred there? Was it a creation out of my own will, or was it some sort of... Right. Extra guidance from a higher being, you know, that.
Right.
So a lot of people want to connect to, let's say, they pray to God and prayers are answered. So what's that
right.
Occurring?
Okay, so my understanding and the way it's described in the Maya material is that it is something that you have generated yourself, that the your own consciousness is determining these things. You wanted this outcome. You wanted answers. You made a point of saying, I want answers. You appealed mm-hmm. to the thing that you felt was the determining force,
mm-hmm.
and you got answers.
Manifested itself.
Now, you identified it as being, you know, the creation or the highest, whatever, but mm-hmm. The way it's described is the actual force that really is making the determining differences in your life is your own consciousness, this powerful thing, your own consciousness. It's just that we so often have been led to think that it's some external force. And so we misidentify what's going on. We associate the success with some external deity or some other thing, where the explanation is that, no, all along it's your own consciousness, and it will be more effective if you acknowledge it consciously as being such, and direct your prayers or your requests of life, if you want to say it that way, to your own consciousness, and recognize that it is this determining power, and that no other power can do that for you. The creation itself is a great power. It is the greatest power that we can conceive of. It's the thing that's responsible for the creation of the universe, the universes, and everything in it, and bringing everything to life, and so on. But it can't determine your the specifics of your life. That's not just not the way it works. You have to determine your own specifics. Some external entity cannot do that for you. So if you are of the view that some external entity is going to do it for you, and you're sort of being passive about it because you're just waiting for that to happen, then you're not going to go anywhere.
Well, what I've heard is waiting is for victims. So being in charge of our own consciousness and being in charge of our own life seems like there's a lot of people who are trying to not be responsible for a lot of their actions, say something made me do it or something else is influencing me. So from the Billy Meyer perspective, from the teaching, is that we've got to be responsible for every decision we make. Is that correct? A lot of responsibility is on our shoulders.
Yes, exactly right. And often the teaching about that sounds quite hard because, we're so used to being told that sort of thing by some sort of unwelcome religious authority figure. You're responsible, stand up for yourself, and we tend to think, hands off. But what it's saying, all it's saying is, for goodness sake, it's just the way it works. You are created, you're a creature that has its own controls, and you don't know it. You're waiting for something else to steer for you, but actually you are controlling it yourself. You're just not conscious of it. And you need to learn that if you want to live life in a way that's where you can be successful and harmonious in this process, you need to be conscious of the fact that you've got the steering wheel right in front of you.
Right.
It's there. you're turning it this way and that way, but at the moment you do it in an unconscious and uncontrolled way. With terrible results on the whole, just because of that, because you're not aware of that, because the teaching, predominant teaching, has not been that. It's been, this direction comes from outside somewhere. So we think of ourselves as these weak little things that we've got to reach up outside to some big thing to make things happen. But no, it just doesn't work that way. And
we have control. We have total control of our destiny or our future.
Virtually. You know, he doesn't. He's not being extreme about this. It's like the main themes apparently are predetermined, like when you are born and when you die, and the main thrust of your life. But all the little bits you're absolutely determining. But the predetermination is not a result of some god or something like that. I think I can only assume, and this is my purely personal conclusion, that it's the sum of the previous lives that sort of has caused this necessary lifespan and lifestyle this time round. It's sort of, it just logically led to this being the next obvious thing to do on your path of evolution. But anyway, for all intents and purposes, you determine your lifestyle, your life down to the finest detail of your thoughts.
Okay, so it's all based on our thoughts. That's basically what's the driving factor of our lives.
Yes.
Okay. Hmm.
And the point is, don't accept this as a belief. Don't think it's something that's being imposed. People tend to think, the extraterrestrials are telling this is how it is, and we've got this aversion to authority, and we've got this aversion to sort of so-called higher beings. They're just human beings with a high degree of learning and experience saying, look, we've learnt this stuff, but explore it. It's no good to you if you don't come to understand it through your own experience. So if you don't find it is your own experience, don't accept it. Please don't.
Right. So find out for ourselves, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Find out for ourselves. And that's the most rewarding and liberating thing.
Right. So what is the perspective about religion from the perspective of Billy Meyer or the Plejaran? And that's another question just to keep in mind, the difference between Pleiadian and Plejaran.
Okay.
So first about the religious and then...
Right, right. And I'll try not to forget the second point.
Sure, I remember.
Okay. So they, basically the Plejaran have come. They've employed Billy Meyer, who's, you know, voluntarily taken on this task of being a teacher. That's all he is a teacher. Someone has had advanced training in order to make him qualified for the task that any teacher needs to be qualified in this way.
Mm-hmm.
To make it possible for us to get this information in a way that doesn't shock our psyches and so forth. They provide this teaching, and part of the teaching is the gods of the earth were human. They were our distant relatives in ancient times, extraterrestrials that are just humans with a very long lifespan, mm-hmm. under various circumstances came to earth and misled the more primitive earth human beings and set themselves up as gods. And this was for the purpose of controlling the more primitive people, keeping them in check. And by presenting ideologies and belief systems of different kinds, the reason that that is not good, apart from obvious, you know, if it's false, then obviously it's not good. But the reason that a belief system is said to be not good is because if you're just accepting an idea, a system of belief, it's already been formed. It's a set of ideas. It's already been molded, pre-molded. Here it is. Believe it. If you're faithful, you'll believe it. If you want to go to heaven, you believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So that it requires you to believe it. It doesn't allow you to question and experience reality directly for yourself. That's the argument. So if you're not experiencing the reality directly for yourself to discover what the truth really is and learning that way and becoming informed about what's true that way, then your consciousness isn't allowed to function properly. You're not going to get that learning because you've just got this thing that is not inspiring any learning.
Yes, it's like living in limbo for and to me that's the greatest part of, let's say, mind control in a way, the suppression of the consciousness to learn, or the spirit to learn and grow.
Okay. Exactly. So when you're talking about, you know, oppressive forces on the planet, you know, it's this group, it's that group, it's terrible oppression and, you know, revolution and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The context that the Plejara material sits in is, look, it's been going on for millennia. We're telling you who they were. yes, it's happening. It will continue to happen, but my goodness, learn now, we're telling you. Learn self-responsibility. It's just your natural function. And you cannot be enslaved if you take responsibility for your own consciousness, because even if you are in a physically, some sort of physical restraint, the power of your consciousness is profound and it can still have an enormous influence on the situation. It's so easy to hijack the consciousness of a whole population if that population is not alert and paying attention to reality, because it's been hijacked with various preformed ideas. And this includes all the stuff that we get fed on television and this sort of thing that we just mindlessly swallow because we haven't developed integrity of our own. We haven't developed a world, a structure of thoughts that we very deliberately put together that is firm. I love a metaphor that Billy provides. It's quite familiar sounding in the book Might of the Thoughts, where he says, look, your consciousness is like a garden plot. If you're neglecting your garden plot, it doesn't mean that nothing's growing there. It's full of weeds, you know, and it's full of the vacant spaces are taken up by weeds that are drifting in from anywhere. They could be anything, just anything that's floating by just sort of lands there and takes hold, you know, if it can, if there isn't already something in the way.
Yep.
And so it's not that if you're not really doing anything consciously with your consciousness, it doesn't mean that nothing's happening. It's not still wreaking havoc.
Yes.
Without your being aware of it. And again, you can think of something like a poltergeist situation where someone, you know, if we accept that this is what happens under those circumstances, you hear of cases where there's things flying around the rooms, terrible destruction. But some distraught person living there is generating it all quite unaware. It's sort of like that with everybody who doesn't know to some extent or another. You're sort of just causing all this chaotic havoc.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe things aren't flying around the room, but you've got all these problems going on because you're just unaware of the various things that you're allowing just to take hold in your consciousness. So if the main idea that's coming into your head is buy McDonald's, buy McDonald's, buy McDonald's, because mm-hmm. you're always watching television, that's what you'll do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you haven't got any stronger ideas, you know.
Yeah. Well, I watched a little clip, and it was just a test, and they were asking people, you know, who's the vice president of the USA and, you know, who won the Civil War, and they couldn't answer it. But then they asked questions like, who's Brad Pitt married to and who was he previously married to? And they knew the answers to that. And it seems like it's a lot to do with what's been presented on TV and whether you, you know, take hold of what's been presented to you as being fact. But it seems that a lot of people don't even know their own history. But, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, a great focus. One of the reasons I really love this teaching and find it very, very important is so much of the spiritual teaching that you find in the world is just that. It's spiritual teaching. It teaches you about your, you know, harmony and peace and doing meditation and loving one another, and or at least parts of it does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all very appealing. But this teaching says, and develop knowledge.
Right.
And in my upbringing, a Christian upbringing, that was kind of the enemy. You know, in some ways we were encouraged to be knowledgeable because we're, you know, sort of academics and this was good and you sort of get praised in school for doing that and this sort of thing. But on the other hand, knowledge is kind of bad because it's sort of like anti-faith.
Mm.
So, but this teaching is do love, do meditation, learn about the consciousness, live in harmony with each other, evolve and learn knowledge. You need knowledge because that is knowledge, the knowledge about how the consciousness works, the knowledge about our extraterrestrial history that allows us to understand why there is this just enormous mass, huge mm-hmm. proliferation of religious teaching. Why? Why is this complex of different teaching? Why is this chaos? Why are there myths all over the world that sort of talk about these super beings with extra long lives? You know, well, they have this knowledge and we can access it and it does make sense and you can learn these things. And if you do learn about history, then you learn about the various wars that have started through false flag terrorism. You learn about, you know, this is a matter of record these days. You can learn how wars came about and discover that they are invariably hoaxed.
Yes.
The starts of these wars are hoaxed,
mm-hmm.
premises that are invented. If you learn that, then you're not going to send your sons off to the next one.
Exactly.
You know? And if everybody didn't send their sons off to the next one, then it would be a bit hard for them to exist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we don't have in this teaching, in this philosophy that is presented, they do not encourage the idea of this sort of us and them mentality.
Okay.
The bad oppressors and we're the victims.
Mm-hmm.
No. They say take responsibility, learn, pay attention, don't support the warmongers, don't give power to the people who would take advantage of you in your wishy-washy ignorance if you're not taking control of your consciousness. Yes, it's hard. Yes, you've got you know, millennia of bad habits of not thinking for yourselves, but you can change. Here is a way. If you have the will, here is the instruction book. You just have to get really busy and be very diligent.
That's
I find that an enormously encouraging thing. It makes me very optimistic, because although the global situation is predicted to just get far worse, it's going to keep heading the way it's heading because people do not change.
Uh-huh.
there is a way to change. The reason we're in such a mess is for a specific reason because of a peculiar history.
Okay. Can you elaborate a bit on that?
It's because, you know, this place has been a prison planet. It's been a place where people have fled to in the past. They've taken refuge here. Mm-hmm. It's had a messy history. And as I mentioned, in ancient times where, you know, long-lived, highly advanced human beings took advantage of the less advanced people,
right.
we just have this history of belief, mm-hmm. and we have stagnated. And because of that, being removed from reality, not paying attention to the creational laws, and I'm going to have to explain that.
Yes,
more, I think,
I want to know more
break,
about that too.
But,
yeah. We're coming up to a break, just so you're aware.
Not paying attention to reality, not paying attention to the creational laws, because we already feel that we have the solution in the form of a belief or ideology,
right.
Means that we do not attend to things like caring for the environment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's a very large reason why we're in the dire straits we're in now.
Right.
Just not respecting the natural way of things, including our own nature.
Right. Yes, like it's coming up close to the break, and I didn't want to ask a loaded question because, from what I'm aware, Billy Meyer has made predictions, and I want to, after the break, discuss anything to do with the world's future. If you're able to answer any of those, if not, that's fine.
Oh, in the broadest terms, I can.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Okay. So just before going, you mentioned just what are the creational laws, just the basic, not what they are, but what is a creational law?
Okay. It's the underlying – I'm sorry.
No, and after the break we'll go into it.
Yeah. Basically, it's the underlying principles of reality. It's the principles, the laws that govern reality, the things that don't change regardless of whether you believe in them or not. They're just there. They're the things that run the universe, put it that way, and can be discovered sooner or later by anyone wanting to pay attention.
All right, excellent. We'll be right back after the break. You've joined me on Expanding Into Consciousness. We'll return in a couple of minutes. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Expanding Into Consciousness. My name is Rodrigo Soto, and I'll be your host for this evening. On today's show, we have Vivian Legg of Figu Australia, who's following Billy Meyer teachings. And Vivian, we were just touching base on what the universal or creational laws were. Can you expound a little bit more on that, please?
Okay. So the whole nature of the teaching is that it's essential to respect reality. It sounds like a really obvious thing to say, mm-hmm. but the way we are seen here on Earth is that we're not doing that. we're not in the habit of noticing and respecting how things actually are. We just don't even realize that we're not paying attention to how things really are.
Mm-hmm.
So the creational laws are the underlying principles that govern reality, the things that just are, whether you're believing them or not. Things such as that the human consciousness, the power of the thoughts, determine the life of the human being. They form the life of the human being. You can say, well, I don't believe in that. But the advice is, well, it happens whether you believe in it or not. And if you examine the situation closely and honestly, you discover that that is actually what's happening. And even if you're not conscious of it, it's going to be happening. So we talk about the laws and recommendations of creation. So the, mm-hmm. the law is that the human thoughts form the human's life. So the recommendation is, well, take control of the situation and make sure that you're doing this in harmony with the natural course of things. Don't work against it. Don't deny it. Don't try and exist without, you know, the very creation that is your provides you with the life force, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So other creational laws are things such as everything comes into being and passes away again. Nothing is eternal, not even creation itself. Creation itself, the energy behind everything, the creative force behind everything, is said to be evolving itself into a higher form of creation. So
right.
We tend to, you know, we have ideas whereby certain things, certain beings, certain, you know, we want things to live forever. We want ourselves to live forever. But they say, no, everything changes, everything has to change. That's just a creational law. Okay. And if you resist that idea, you're out of harmony with things and you're going to be fighting fights that aren't necessary. Right. So that's what a creational law is. Another one is that evolution is the purpose of life. Another one is there's negative and positive in everything, and I don't mean good and bad, although that's part of it, but negative and positive is in everything. You can't have just negative, you can't have just positive.
Right.
And the neutral, positive way of life is to respect both of those things and take them both into consideration.
Just if I can interrupt there, I don't see something as good or bad. I see something as good and better, because depending on your perspective of the situation, let's say someone experiencing an event or something in the third world country could be considered bad from my point of view, but from their point of view, would be seen totally different. So I always see it as a learning experience, and something like not to identify as being bad or good, but just good or better. I don't know if that's the right way of thinking about it, but to me, that is logical to me.
Right.
If that makes sense.
I used to think more along those lines, where I was not interested in seeing things as bad or negative in any sense. But I find this teaching very appealing because it says, no, you should find things bad, things that are destructive,
yes.
You should find them bad, because there are bad negative forces that in the sense that if you are being prevented from evolving, if you're being prevented from thriving and accessing necessary love, for instance,
right.
Then you need to recognize that as a bad thing so that you can avoid it, a bit the way you need to recognize pain that
so
comes
that
from having your foot in the fire so that you take your foot out of the fire.
Right, okay.
So the teaching is the fire, for instance, that is a good example.
Okay.
The fire provides heat and something to cook food with so that you can live, so that you can thrive, but it also is something that can burn your house down and burn
right.
you. Now, in that sense, these are all neutral things, but if you've got to, it's appropriate to think that it's bad to have your house burned down in the sense that you shouldn't encourage that situation.
Sure.
However, at the same time, the teaching is bad things, you know, the negatives of the bads, you put that together with the positive of the learning, the positive of
yes.
being forced to confront your own mortality, which forces you to get to know your innermost self, which goes beyond the physical and shows you the immense power of your innermost self and the creative force behind everything and, you know, the thing that should really inform the way you live. So suffering is taught to be something, for instance, that is not to be avoided. You shouldn't encourage it. You shouldn't generate it. But if you have it, it's not something to sort of run away from and never be in contact with, because you need the lessons that come from that. So
there's always a learning experience.
It's not the typical, it's certainly not the typical teaching about negative, positive that we're getting at the moment in modern times. It is, the teaching is recognize things that are destructive and degenerate and recognize them as bad, but be neutral, positive about that. That is to say, don't be consumed by hatred. Don't
right.
be consumed by fear, anxiety, revenge. Occupy yourself with looking for a neutral and constructive way of dealing with that situation that actually creates results based on logic.
Yeah. Well, one example is like for a long time, I considered an event that happened to me as very bad and very negative. At that moment in time, that would have been a justified conclusion. I experienced a three-month-induced drug-induced psychosis. So for that period of time, it was horrible, and I wanted to have revenge, and I had hatred for the people that did that to me, who drugged me. And you know, but from that experience, I learned, one, that if I kept going down the road that I went, I could be either dead or in jail, because back then I was using drugs. But from that event, I ended up meeting my wife, having a beautiful daughter, and having a better life as a result of that. So back then it was bad, right? But now I'm sort of grateful that it sort of shook me up, and that's why I said, you know, it's good or better. But I'm neutrally positive about that now, as you were saying, because I'm looking at it from a different point of view and different perspective about it.
Yes, and so my understanding is that the way is not to, I mean, yes, it's very constructive to look at it as a learning experience, but it's not inappropriate that you found that objectionable. You shouldn't have enjoyed it.
That's
for,
right.
For, you know,
yes.
You shouldn't have enjoyed it. It's not, they're not saying you should enjoy bad things.
Sure.
The bad things in and of themselves are still bad, you know, if it's if they're destructive things. But first of all, you know, assuming they are bad and you're not just someone who's misinterpreting things somehow, but at the same time, try and exercise a neutral positive attitude whereby you see it in the bigger scheme of learning.
Yes.
You know, I can say myself that the hardest time of my life was a time that it was, you know, bitterly painful, but fortunately I had already had a lot of this teaching behind me and I was able to think about it very, very clearly, and I felt the pain and I knew why it was, but it was reduced by the fact that I could also recognize that it was forcing me to learn lessons about things I never knew about myself. Inner resources, it forced me to become bigger and better, but the pain was still pain, and the things that led to that pain were still negative things that really, you know, it shouldn't have happened. They were mistakes and so forth.
Right.
And it's not saying go back and think that there weren't mistakes. They were mistakes. Mm-hmm. There was pain. There was failing, and there was a situation that just couldn't be resolved, so that caused pain. And, you know, it's things like loneliness. If you're alone, there is a need. They're not saying that you never need anyone. No, there is a natural need to be with other people.
Yes.
So to feel alone, feel loneliness is sort of a natural way of trying to get you to correct that. But while you're being lonely, you've got enormous rich learning to do. And if you're able to understand it at the same time, you know, if you're able to, when that loneliness comes upon you, for instance, you're able to say, okay, now I'm learning this wonderful lesson, I'm going to practice this, practice that, blah, blah, then it's all, you know, in perspective, and you're in a much better position to actually correct the things that led to that in the first place, for instance.
Yes.
That's really the way it's been talked about as far as I understand it. Well, it takes some thinking about it. I still have, you know, for me it's a long process getting my head around that whole way of thinking.
Yes. And is there any books where this, I think, Power of the Thoughts, is that the name of the book that where this comes in?
Might of the Thoughts.
Might of the Thoughts, okay.
Is the first one I translated along with a couple of other people in Australia. And that certainly goes into all this in great detail, which is why I thought it was a good one to translate.
Okay. And for our listeners, if they want to get a copy of Might of the Thoughts, where would they need to go?
Okay, so now in the United States, you can actually go to the theyfly.com.
Theyfly.
Michael Horn's website, because he's distributing those books.
Mm-hmm.
So most listeners will be there. If you're in Australia, you can come to the Figure Australia webpage, which is http://, how's it go, Colin?
///
Thank you.
Yeah.
au.figure.org,
I believe.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Org. Yes, I don't know my own Earl.
That's
but okay. We have a shop there, and there are now two books that we've translated, plus a couple of others that are available that really do cover everything in great detail.
And there's one book that I believe is for free for download. Is that Goblet of the Truth?
Goblet of the Truth. I think there's still a PDF version of that available. There's also a hard copy for people who want that, and that's an enormously important text as well.
And what does Goblet of the Truth cover?
Okay. Well, you know, that's a big question, but that's teaching of the prophets.
Okay.
The teaching of the prophets. The prophets being teachers, not elevated prophets, figures of worship. Just people who are qualified for the job of teaching this teaching in the context in which it exists. And Billy is said to be the latest of the lineage of Enoch. The Enoch lineage.
Right.
Yeah. And so that is the teaching of the prophets, and Billy has provided sort of the modern update in the latter section of the book.
Okay.
So it's very much
so
it's
teachings
the same.
Teachings of the teachers in regard.
It has been provided throughout the ages to Earth humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they say, and it's very much what I'm talking about. But it's
right.
it's worded differently.
Uh-huh.
Billy's teaching in particular, he's very, very very wordy, but no word is wasted in the sense that he provides extraordinary detail on all of these things by
yes.
providing very long sentences. So if you've got a desire to learn, then there's just endless information that you can learn from those teachings.
Right. And from what I understand, there's also words in German which aren't actually directly translated either.
Mm. There are a few that we've been told or we've resolved
uh-huh.
are just too hard to adequately translate into English without, you just distort the meaning too much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better to leave it as it is and say, well, we can't do it justice in English. You just have to have a bit of a think about this and recognize
right.
that that's the case and see what it means, supposedly mm-hmm. means in German and go from there. You know, it's, and the reason we do that is because the precision is important in explaining
mm-hmm.
this teaching, and it's designed for, centuries to come. So it's not just the level of understanding that we have now, but a much greater level that it's intended for. So the more evolved a humanity is, the more capacity it has to see the detail. And we know the expression, the devil's in the detail.
Yes.
It really does matter how you understand things. Clarifications are important. So that's why such a lot of trouble has been gone to do the translations. And that's why they are quite peculiar translations in a way. And we've got some very incorrect sounding English in places because we've chosen to make a compromise just to try to get a more accurate meaning across.
Right, right. And like, as I said, the first book that I discovered was the Talmud of Emmanuel. There's no official English translation at this stage, is that correct?
That's correct, although I hear there may be one in the wind, although I can't say any more about that
sure.
at the moment. So
sure.
many people are keen to get that naturally and
mm-hmm.
It may be on the table for work. Not with us, though, not with the Australian Christian,
sure,
knock
sure.
on our door.
sure. Okay. So does the teachings, Billy Meyer's teaching, provide any methods for learning and practicing? I mean, I know you touched base on meditation, but is there a certain way to meditate?
Well, yes. And one of the reasons I translated Billy's other book, and when I say I mean an enormous amount of work was done by a couple of other people too,
uh-huh.
but I took the first swing at it. And the reason I particularly wanted to do that one is it's full of really good instruction about the benefit of meditation, but also various ways to approach it. And
uh-huh.
what I like about this is that it's so clean. It's so clean. It just, uh-huh. meditation is simply paying attention. So you can't get around it without learning to concentrate. So many of the exercises that are provided to do with it are merely concentration exercises, focusing on one thing without letting the thoughts interfere.
Okay.
So, that
so clearing the mind sort of philosophy is not is a technique, and it's not really across the board with all sorts of meditation. So you're saying focusing something?
Okay. Now, meditation is a word that Billy uses quite broadly just to mean anything that you're focused on, really.
Okay.
But it includes the type of meditation where you take your consciousness beyond the thoughts, to the quietness of that space beyond the thoughts.
Okay.
It includes that, but that also requires this concentration ability. So the easiest way is to start off simply by noticing, for instance, the air going in and out of the nostrils
mm-hmm.
And nothing else, and not letting thoughts interfere. Because this gives you the ability to control your consciousness, and once you can do that, then you can much more easily practice the technique of getting beyond your thoughts altogether.
Right.
So that's important, and these concentration techniques are important just for noticing life in general, just for me noticing the things that you're saying to me and the sound of your voice, and being aware of the context altogether in a much clearer form. It's the sort of thing that I get better at the more I meditate. So it's got a broad application. It's a very simple idea. It's not about going into altered states and different dimensions. It might feel like an altered state. It is altered in the sense that it's not what you normally experience, but the explanation is that the consciousness, you're just simply doing something different with the same consciousness.
With intention as well?
Well, your intention is to, you have a specific goal.
Goal, right.
So you have to set yourself a specific goal of, for instance, mm-hmm. getting beyond the thoughts into that quiet space.
Mm-hmm.
But having done so, the sensation that comes with that is just how it feels to have your consciousness still and
right.
able to perceive in a way that's not being interfered with the chatter of your thoughts. You get inspirations, intuitions, the information of the spirit comes into the consciousness in that state, but it's still the consciousness. It's the same tool that is perceiving things and doing things throughout the day. It's just that it's doing a different thing
mm-hmm.
during the meditation. So to me, that's a very clean thing, but the things it does are extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're focused towards a spiritual understanding of life, then they're creative and constructive and bringing about harmony. And ultimately, if we pursue this course, then yes, peace on earth.
Mm. Well, you said some peace on earth, and that just brought me back to like a mantra that I've heard. Are there any mantras that we can that is utilized in the meditation process that you are describing?
Well, we do have a peace meditation that I suppose is a mantra. And it's simply, you know, peace on earth, be among all human beings. Peace, I never remember this, but it's
but
peace,
you know,
be on earth and among all beings. So among all beings in the universe, right?
Right.
So it's peace on earth, and it acknowledges that there are beings throughout the universe. It acknowledges mm-hmm. that we need peace. It's a peace meditation. It's a particular collection of words that we say. It's not those words I just said, which is why
no,
I have trouble remembering
right.
what it
because
means.
Because it's in a different language, right?
Exactly. Yep. It's Lyrian.
Right. Okay. So what is Lyria or Lyra?
Lyrian. So the Lyrian vegan system, planetary mm-hmm. system, that's where our extraterrestrial ancestors, those who came to the earth and influenced it in such a manner, that's where they originally came from in ancient times.
In the physical universe, right?
Physical. We're talking, mm-hmm. these are physical people. This mm-hmm. is a physical part of the universe. This is mm-hmm. a planetary system where there are all kinds of different human beings of different sizes, different colors, as you know. Humanity. You know, this role of the human being as an evolutionary tool of the human, you know, the spirit form, this is a thing that occurs throughout the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that is said to develop throughout the universe, but, you know, in taking slightly different forms depending on the environment that offers itself, because it's the formation of a conscious consciousness which results in the human that distinguishes it from other
right.
other creatures. Plants.
Mm-hmm. I know we're sidetracking a little bit here, but I'm interested. Like, so the human ancestors were from the Lyrian civilization, Lyrian and
vegan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there any opposing, or not opposing, but humanoid, but not necessarily human civilizations which
well,
have
humanoids,
been?
Oh, humanoid seems to be something that's very much around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the sense that it's, well, you know, I don't think I'm qualified to really talk about
sure.
that, but
we do
talk about humanoid, that is to say things that are more or less behaving like human beings but look more like other animals.
Right. Okay, so
having
reptile
evolved,
comes up
having,
in mind.
Well, you know, I like to avoid that one because
sure.
we know the stories to do with the reptoids, and I find those problematic and
okay.
Alarmist, and I don't find them very constructive.
Okay.
But
well, possibly
all kinds of – I beg your pardon?
No, so it leads down the path of, I suppose, fear and confusion when those sorts of stuff.
I think so. I think mm-hmm. a lot of that has been generated to cause a distraction from a lot of the bad things that really are happening.
Yes.
And it also, to some extent, serves to make it more ridiculous sounding than it really is. I mean,
right.
reality is pretty fantastic sounding.
Well, got more important things to worry about than to deal with you know, those sorts of topics, like what's really needed to happen on this planet to find a solution to the chaos that's occurring.
Well, exactly. Mm. And again, I want to keep leading us back to the important teaching of self-responsibility.
Right.
Certainly, certainly, along with the spiritual teaching, the Pliyarin and Billy Meyer provide masses of commentary about all the terrible things that are going on this planet. When Billy was a teenager, he's now in his late 70s,
Right.
he was sending letters to the world leaders saying, overpopulation is going to be a terrible thing. If you don't change it now, it's going to lead to all sorts of terrible things. All sorts of other terrible things are going to happen. He predicted very specific things that have been unfolding in the last couple of decades, or since he mentioned them.
Right.
So they've made very strident commentary about all sorts of political things. They do not make any bones about how serious it is.
Right.
We are in really bad shape. We are headed for disasters at all sorts of levels. But
Right.
they do avoid the idea that it's total destruction, total annihilation.
So we're not going into that path. Like, so
Well,
some
it's
bad
getting,
things are about to happen.
it sounds like it's going to be very close to that.
Okay.
But they're very discouraging of kind of a catastrophe mentality. That sure, you have to be aware of it, but again, you have to do this in a neutral,
Yes, I was just
positive
thinking that
way
there's that
and
thought
deal
again,
with it
isn't it?
logically and not just generate a lot of fear and
Fear.
hatred and a sort of a reactionary attitude. They certainly don't encourage the idea of bloody rebellion because it's such a destabilizing thing. And then what? Yeah, people who promote bloody,
Revolution type action.
revolution, then what? They lead to chaos, and
Right.
chaos is a really good way of imposing your own order, isn't it?
Yes.
Generate chaos between peoples and then impose your own order. So you've got to really use your head, keep your head, and take logical action.
Okay.
Logic is the basis of all this teaching. Logic and love come together. Logic, wisdom, love. And don't just generate more of the same degenerated, killing revenge. And
Right. The
it's
eye
so
for an eye
easy.
is not really the solution then.
Absolutely not. And sort of hysterical finding a new enemy to hate, so that we all go to war again and again and again, and are overtaken by fear. It's just not going to, the biggest power in this world, there are many, many powers, and they don't make any bones about it. They harshly criticize the United States and all countries such as Australia that just go along with United States policy of being world police, and upsetting things all over the world and taking the military into all sorts of parts of the world. They're very, very vocal about that. See that as one of the greatest dangers, along with the overpopulation. That goes down like a ton of bricks, usually.
Right.
It's an uncomfortable thing that they say, but also the European Union gets an enormous criticism because it's turning into a dictatorship, a power that's using a very destructive, it's on a very destructive course. So they don't shy away from making this sort of commentary. We're going to have environmental disasters due to our abuse.
Right.
A blatant abuse of the environment. We do not listen to the whole global warming thing. We just continue to generate more and more pollutants that are destroying our atmosphere. We're going to get worse droughts, floods. There's going to be famines. There's going to be cannibalism. It's going to be terrible.
How far away is, I mean, it's already heading down that path, but
Well,
is
the
there a time
beginning of
frame?
this millennia is
Right.
when the terrible things will really start to happen, is what the prophecies say. You
Right.
can find some of these, the most relevant ones, the ones that are considered most relevant now, are actually on our webpage for anyone who wants to have a look. It's
Okay.
not for the light. It's not for the, you need to be serious about your inquiries if you want to go and read that
Sure.
stuff.
Sure.
It's not happy reading, but it's got to be understood. I find it incredibly encouraging. People find it so, so depressing, but I find it encouraging because I can see that we're heading for these terrible things. It's
Right.
obvious to me. I'm thinking everything's wrong. I'm one of these people that says, "Oh dear, that's no good. That's no good. That's no good." Everything is being done the wrong way. And finally, these people have spelt it out and explained exactly the same thing. And so yes, and if you don't change your way, blah 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 blah. I find it depressing when people don't acknowledge how bad things are.
Yeah,
Because
because
when
if
you
you don't
acknowledge how
acknowledge,
bad things are, you have a chance of actually doing an appropriate
yes,
thing about
exactly.
it.
instead of turning a blind eye, hoping nothing's occurring, and hoping for the best. That's really a pacifist point of view.
Exactly.
I think I said the right word.
They're not pacifists. They're not saying, the Billy Meyer camp, and I know you've got a rate coming up, are not pacifists in the sense they don't say don't defend yourself.
Uh-huh. That's great.
Because you've got to respect your own life and the life of your own family. You know, it's no good just saying, I won't defend myself and let someone walk in and kill you and your family.
Right.
No, that would be totally wrong, because why wouldn't you respect your own life?
Exactly.
That would be wrong.
So there's a question there before we go to the break. I think it's going to come up really soon, but in relation to your own life and someone else's life. So we have the right to defend ourselves, yes?
Yes, but do it in a way that minimizes the harm to the other person.
Okay.
If you can lock them up and keep people safe that way, that will cause them to learn.
Right. Okay.
I'll have to elaborate on that. That's not a good answer.
Yeah, I understand. It's just which life is more important, mine or the other person attacking. So you have the right to defend yourself is the way that I see
it. Exactly, but don't just shoot them dead unless you absolutely have to.
Need to.
Right.
Okay, we've just come up to the break. We've got half hour left, so you've joined myself and Vivian Legge of Figure Australia talking about the Billy Meyer teachings. We'll be right back after the break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Expanding Into Consciousness. My name is Rodrigo Soto, and I'll be your host for this evening. We've got about 30 minutes left. Just going to do a bit of housekeeping. We are a listener-supported station, and we go totally by your donations. If you're in the chat channel, please hit the donate button on the left-hand side of the window and just donate anything you can. Just the price of a cup of coffee will help go a long way. And also our archives, they're accessible for anyone to download for $5 a month. Lots of information from all our hosts. So yes, please donate and let us stay on air. Now on today's show, we have Vivian Legge of Figure Australia, who's a group that follows the work of Billy Meyer. Now, Vivian, we were talking about something specific towards the end I forgot the topic.
We're talking about self-defense.
Yes,
and pacifism.
That's right.
And I was explaining that the Meyer teaching doesn't teach pacifism. It certainly doesn't teach, aggression.
Mm-hmm.
The whole teaching is based on logic and on respect and attentiveness and respect for the truth, respect for a life. But that includes your own life. So it doesn't teach that you should just let someone come in and attack you, or you should just let someone come in and exploit you or enslave you.
Mm-hmm.
You have a right to self-defense, but it's a logical thing, and they're at the same time, for that same reason, absolutely opposed to the death penalty, for instance.
Right.
And it comes back to we're talking about the consciousness. And all these things that the Billy Meyer case covers, they are directly relevant to understanding how the consciousness works, which is why I love the teaching. It's consistent across the board. Every section of it is relevant to every other section. So you want to understand the nature of the consciousness. If the purpose of the consciousness is to evolve on behalf of the spirit form, if it does this through determining the life of the human being through the thoughts, the type of the thoughts, then that sheds light on the whole matter of, a death penalty. If you put to death a serious criminal or anybody at all, how is that person then in a position to do any learning?
That's right.
You see, you haven't solved anything, because that personality will dissolve and a new one will form for the purpose of reincarnation, but it will only be at the level it ended at.
Right.
So it's going to have to kind of learn those kind of lessons again, hopefully.
Right.
But if you are in a position to put that person in a place where it can learn, it's forced to learn the creational laws. And we're not talking about some nasty little cell where there's torture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. They're absolutely opposed to torture, a terrible, inhumane and illogical thing. Keep thinking logic or illogic. They're talking a situation, what they have done apparently in ancient times and still do, is they will put serious criminals in a place that they can do no harm to others, like an isolated or, you know, planet somewhere.
Somewhere in the Milky Way.
Well, yeah, and put them where they are forced to basically fend for themselves, and they have enough tools that they can grow some food,
right,
and keep themselves going and maintain their lives, in a humane way, but hard. Right. So if they start to get too developed, you know, their tools, they get a bit, they sort of manage to make themselves some more sophisticated tools, and those are taken away. Because the point is not to just punish. It's not, the point is not punishment. The point is learning.
The point is rehabilitation, spiritual
exactly,
rehabilitation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So where they are forced to confront the laws of creation being you've got to respect the earth, you've got to respect the fact that you've got to respect that potato that you just planted. Right. Yeah. You've got to observe it, notice it. You've got to nurture it so that it will give you life.
Right.
You know, it grows up and makes more potatoes and gives you life. So they're reacquainted with this reality that they've got to respect the laws of creation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most powerful learning. And so it's got to be quite hard, but not so hard that they're just overcome by trauma, that right. nothing can work. So what we do is we put people in prisons where they're just traumatized or not really required to be challenged in a right. way that challenges their whole way of thinking.
So it's still giving them an opportunity for spiritual growth and learning so that exactly. they don't leave this plane on a dead end and then having to restart the whole process
yes,
in a way.
Yes, exactly. So right. there's no logical point in the death penalty. Mm. And, of course, it's also a terrible shock to the psyche and this sort of thing, and terrible mm. shock to everyone involved. And they're absolutely, as I said, against torture for the same reasons. It absolutely does nothing other than traumatise. There's no logical point to it. It's yes. inhumane and barbaric and degenerate and so forth. So it's about understanding the consciousness and what's right for the consciousness. So the consciousness is this immense power for change, but you're not going to be able to do good change with it until you get your own under some control.
Mm.
So it's very important to a serious student of this teaching that they actually do their meditation practice and actually work on restructuring their own consciousness and right. coming to terms with the laws of creation. There's no way around it. It's not like some nice theory. There's some sort of academic pursuit or some spiritual pursuit that's got nothing to do with daily life. It's got everything to do with daily life. I mean, I myself have spent a lot of years struggling to try and inform people about the terrible things going on in the world that I felt people didn't know were happening. Mm-hmm. And the conclusion I came to was, yes, it is important to take responsibility and try and inform your fellow human being, but I found that wasn't enough because people don't know what to do in reaction to the information. People are overcome by fear or by aversion to the negatives, people or fear of the responsibility or disbelief or just not being in the habit of taking responsibility in some form. So it led me to think that then having done that, the best thing for me to do was spend time focusing on the spiritual teaching so that people had a chance to start to learn how to actually manage their own consciousnesses so that we know what to do with the information that comes our way and aren't just overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
At which point we can start to do something constructive and we're stronger and we're in a better position to deal with any traumas that do come our way as a result of things getting even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And also to learn to reach that deeper part of yourself that understands that we do exist beyond the physical. You know, this doesn't teach, our personalities don't continue. So if we lose our lives, our personalities don't continue, but the truer, deeper underlying force behind all things continues.
Yeah.
And if we think spiritually, we can identify with that and lose our fears of these things that go on at the material level.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that a really, really important thing to be focusing on. So not only to make it easy for other people to get access to that very, very constructive teaching, but also for myself, it's been very important to withdraw from sort of trying to inform people about the woes of the world and have time to just get my own act together, to restructure my own self and become a more integral, you know, have an integrity to my personality that I didn't have before because I simply hadn't applied myself that way. And I know that it's been a useful thing and I can continue to be productive at the same time. So it's, I find the instruction that Billy provides in his book, The Way to Live, very, very important because it shows you the importance of taking time out so that you've given yourself enough space without the troubles of the world.
Bit of respite.
Yes, exactly. Mm. You can't do work on yourself if you're constantly distracted by troubles.
Right, right.
So
is this what you recommend for, let's say, someone wants to start following the work of Billy Meyer's teachings? What's the book called? The Way to Live?
The Way to Live is the other one that we've translated as a group and figure. Well,
okay.
Since our existence, it's been translated and we've published it.
Right.
We've just that one's just been out a few weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
So it teaches the need to have time out, and that includes daily time in a quiet space away from everything if you can possibly manage it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't teach that you should stay there because, for instance, you know, of course people have the experience of noticing people in monks and monasteries and so forth who – sorry, people in monasteries who are
monasteries and monks
who seem to be very balanced and peaceful and this sort of thing, and you think, oh, yeah, I want to be like that. That's fine, but what we're looking for is a state of balance that we can maintain when we're out in the ordinary world.
Not to go to extremes, basically. So,
right. Yeah. So we need time out, but we also need to function in the normal world. So we need to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the goal is not to just spend all your time learning the spiritual teaching, but to also continue to have some sort of a working life.
Uh-huh.
Obviously not to excess and not in a way where you're exploited and this sort of thing, but in a healthy way because work is your interface with life. That's where you're learning. That's where you're learning the laws of creation. That's where you're putting these things into practice and having your direct experience. And so you're sort of an instrument of creation as you're doing your work. And to think of it that way makes it a joy and makes you more productive and increases your chance of actually finding suitable work that serves an evolutionary purpose.
Nice.
So the importance of work, the importance of time out, the importance of striving, that striving is the natural creational way for the sake of evolution.
Yep.
That if you're not striving, you're going to stagnate. Nice. And anything that doesn't strive ceases to exist. That the creation itself, the force behind everything itself, strives. That's the teaching. Again, the teaching of self-responsibility, which to me is a teaching of liberation.
Right.
It's a teaching that, yeah, you've got the controls, just learn to use them. Wonderfully exciting teaching in my view. But it's like a child getting up on its feet, you know. It hasn't yet got the strength in the legs. It hasn't yet got the coordination. It learns about this body, this wonderful body that will enable it to go across the room, but it hasn't yet got control. So you learn the control. This is a wonderful thing. But part of the self-responsibility teaching is love for yourself. So respecting what you are, learning to love it, learning you love through becoming to understand and gaining wisdom. So love, true love comes with wisdom and understanding. So
it seems like we're being taught the opposite through media, like you need to have this body shape and not what you currently have. You need to, you know, achieve, you know, be not so loving of yourself, but be like the supermodels. It seems like it's sort of backwards way that the whole world is being presenting this sort of ideology of self-acceptance. It's like you shouldn't be happy with who you are. You need to be better. I mean, although in the grand scheme of things, you know, you should improve yourself. But, you know, for an example, my daughter bringing home the latest girls magazine, she's now being self-conscious of herself. And, you know, that it's just, it seems to be backwards the way that the media is presenting how we should be. And,
Oh, Barbie's got a lot to answer for.
Wow.
I grew up with Barbie. I mean,
8 foot tall, like
exactly. You know, we all wanted a figure like Barbie's, and it's so really unrealistic. But the point is, you know, I have to learn this whole thing about loving myself. It's not arrogance.
Uh-huh.
It's respect through paying attention. It's noticing what you are. What you are is something that's much more deep than your physical body or even your personality. You are this creature of creation
mm-hmm.
that's going through a life to nurture your consciousness, to make sure you do things that are not mollycoddling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not making yourself too soft, but things that actually nurture your psyche, things that music is good for you, walking barefoot on the sand is good for you, love is good for you, singing is good for you, going into a forest, nature is good for you, really healthy, good things. Do those for yourself. Don't just sit in your little apartment. You know, find a park. Enjoy a tree.
Connect back to nature. Connect back to the real world.
Exactly, because these are nurturing. This allows you to function in a balanced way. Do your meditation for the same reason.
Right.
Wash. You know, the teaching is everything from how to clean your nose to you know, peace, love, and wisdom and peace on earth, you know.
Hygiene, looking after yourself.
Hygiene.
Yeah.
Be very careful, very meticulous about your hygiene. This is to do with self-respect. When you're all alone, dress well in a self-respecting manner. Honour yourself. It's nothing to do with lifting yourself above what you are. It's just recognising exactly what you are and letting yourself be that.
Be the best of who you are, basically.
Because the predominant teaching on this planet is put your head down. Who do you think you are? You know, I've definitely felt that when I thought I was just trying to be you're like a plant and you've got the flowers and the flowers are coming out and someone says, whack, get your head down. Who do you think you are? Because the teaching is you don't have that in yourself. Those wonderful things are out there in some God or something. You don't have them. So you've got to learn that, well, you do. But learn through noticing that they're there, you know. Don't just accept it as a belief. Notice that they're there and flourish and care for yourself. That's so important. So self-responsibility, striving, taking care of yourself, meditating, work. These are the sorts of the things that are explained in the book, The Way to Live, which is why I thought it was the second most important book to do in the first instance. You know, there's a stack of books, excellent books, and I just had to sort of make a decision about what to start with. It's most likely to get some important stuff across sooner.
Right.
Contemplate death. That's one I found awkward to understand, but a very important one. Billy stresses this time and time again, that the little sections keep revisiting this topic. We haven't come to terms with death, he says, on this planet. Mm. We dread it. We fear it.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's going to lead to, you know, fire and brimstone hell, a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
We're afraid of it for various reasons, if only because we're just afraid of a life coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't come to terms, even though it happens all the time, we haven't come to terms with the fact that it's just a natural part of life and we, you know, we should think of it as a beautiful event the way we think of a baby coming into the world as a beautiful event.
Well, that's the next step, isn't it? After death, then where you go.
Through death is life.
Right.
Now, it doesn't mean you should encourage it. It doesn't mean you should accelerate it.
Yes. Well, that's another question I wanted to ask about the concept of suicide.
They're dead against it.
Dead against it.
Excuse the pun.
I know. Okay.
They're dead against it for the same reason. You know, are you to decide when learning. It's time?
Yes.
You haven't finished yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay.
They actually describe it very harshly as cowardice, which I find I'm still absorbing that lesson.
Mm-hmm. That's that stance.
It is. You know, it's like, no, even at the end, you're responsible for your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's the teaching. But again, at the same time, they're teaching against degeneration. They're teaching against prolonging people's life through, you know, with a machine when someone's way past their use-by date.
Exactly.
This sort of thing. They're teaching against all these. Why do we encourage all these preventable illnesses? You know, all sorts of suffering that we shouldn't be having. So,
well, to me it seems logical. If it's time for you to pass, then that's the time, but shouldn't make that decision yourself. I mean, shouldn't try and prolong just to suffer in the process. If it's right for you to go, then that's the time.
Yeah, and again, also, they're not suggesting that it's anybody else's business other than your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not trying to impose anything. They're just saying this is what would be consistent with the creation laws as we know them. So the whole thing of death, if you contemplate your own death, that it's really, really, really important to contemplate your own death. Okay. Practice it. Practice having peaceful thoughts about it, because mm-hmm. the time of your actual passing is apparently a very important time in the scheme of the evolution of your consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know someone who's dying, do everything you can to make their passing a peaceful time.
Comfortable as well.
Don't sit there saying, no, grandma, it's not time yet. Or, you know, give them the chance just to pass peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take the opportunity to try and impose your own views.
Sure.
Let them have their beliefs.
Yeah.
Unless they ask, and then be very, very gentle in the way you answer.
Well, I've contemplated my own death quite some time for, and I've only gone into the point of view, like, what would I want after it's occurred? Do I want a funeral, or I'd rather people celebrate my life rather than mourn over my death. And, you know, I have my own reservation about what occurs just before that point, but, you know, I'd want it to let it happen in the most natural sense. Not forced in any way. Like, obviously, suicide is not something I'm going to contemplate. But you bring up some very valid points about, you know, being comfortable during that stage, and letting you, or the person who's passing, to think or feel what they need to at that point or prior to that point.
And if you can contemplate the meaning of death and come to terms with it, only then can you contemplate the meaning of life. And I know, you know, you have a little try at imagining sitting on your deathbed. You somehow know that you've only got a few hours left, and imagine, well, have I said everything I should have said? Have I done the things I would have been good to do? And it's very, very creative and constructive thing to do, because it concentrates your mind on whether you're really living life the way is best to live. Beautifully creative. I find that it is a really, really enormously helpful teaching. So that's one of the key ones in the way to live.
Mm-hmm.
So again, to me, it's incredibly down to earth. It deals with all aspects of life. It's very practical. It's about looking after the psyche and not forcing things on people. So we don't go around saying, hey, here are the teachings, we think they're good, you should do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's absolutely everybody's business what they think themselves.
Right.
And it's injurious to somebody else's consciousness, someone else's psyche, to try and force something on them. Mm-hmm. It's not logical. It doesn't work that way. And so respecting the truth is the answer to everything. Just pay attention. That's my mantra.
Well, from what you've said to me now, it's like death is not the ending of this life, but the graduation and going to the next stage.
Exactly.
A graduation of this life.
Right. An opportunity for a further evolution.
Mm.
It's like a snake skin, isn't it? How can a snake get any bigger if you can't shed a skin?
Right. Well, Vivian, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on today's show. I know I've got a few minutes left. Good topic to end on.
Well, it's I find it enormously encouraging, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yes, you're more than welcome. Is there any final thoughts that you have to leave us?
It's very hard to find one thought, because I just get absolutely absorbed by the enormous detail of this case.
But, sure.
Oh, you know, we can just think about, contemplate the footprint you're leaving behind, the footprint each consciousness leaves behind.
Thank you so much, Vivian. I appreciate your time. We've come to the end of the show. You've joined us on Expanding Into Consciousness. And just an update, Stephen D. Kelly has a new website released, which is occupythegetty.com. And again, Vivian, would like to have you back sometime in the future if you're happy to.
Well, thanks very much. I'll be looking forward to that.
Okay, and your website is au.figu.org.
Yeah, with the HTTP
yes.
in the front.
Yes, no www. So it's au.figu.org. Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. Join us next week on Expanding Into Consciousness. We'll see you soon.
Hold on a second.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Hi, this is Bo.
And this is Rocco.
And the Bo and Rocco Show is here to offer insight into legal and lawful remedies. Our goal is to remain free and help others remain free in an ever-increasing police-like state. With the help of our guests, we try to answer questions such as what went wrong and what can we do about it.
So tune in to Revolution Radio at www.freedomslips.com Wednesday nights, 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to listen to the Bo and Rocco Show.
You don't need to expect us.
We're already here.
Revolution Radio. Every Tuesday evening on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, we present our goddess spiritual warrior, Kathy Bilski.
I command. I call to the architect of the universe's divine creators and ask for permission to quantum leap the world in all life forms on all planes and dimensions, seen and unseen, connected with planet Earth. To let us go beyond our known potential into the greatest unknown golden age the universes and worlds and all planets have ever experienced.
Kathy teaches the spiritual truth so that you may create a better life and be able to make positive changes for yourself and for the planet. She helps us remember that we are not powerless, but very creative spiritual beings having an Earth experience. Time to quantum leap into the age of divine enlightenment and let Kathy provide you with the tools of knowledge you need to awaken spiritually. That's the Quantum Leap Show. Let light unite every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern on Revolution Radio Studio B.